Sorry.
C-A-N-A-D-A. Okay, we're off.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Do you know what it is?
I do not.
It is from Wednesday morning, 3 a.m. album.
Oh.
Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah,
it's called Angie.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Hey, Bob.
Hey, dude. How you doing?
Man, I'm okay. I'm here. I've just, God only knows how, but I'm here.
Well, you know, it's overcast for a change, but
it is.
Hot.
But it's still hot
and
muggy.
Well, you know, I was saying on the air last night, there was... in the weather forecast, there was a phrase, and I've lived in Southern California for like eons, and I've never, ever said this on the air, and I've never even heard it. Patchy smoke. That was in the weather forecast.
Well, Bobby Jean, you have patchy lightning right now, don't you?
Patchy folk. patchy smoke. Excuse me.
We have thunder and lightning and rain and a big wind here in Albuquerque.
That's going to go well with the book that we read this week.
You know, thunder only happens when it's raining.
Yeah.
Thunder only.
Yes, and players only live view.
There you go. Okay. Well, this is Thursday night, and you're listening to LA Talk Radio. And this is, of course, The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, in studio with Bob Brill.
Hey.
And on the phone from Albuquerque, New Mexico, is Bobby Jean Bell.
And howdy.
Howdy. And let's get started, because I want to really in-depth into this book. When Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed that they weren't the same as other publicity firms. They work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets, Writer's Block being one, and organizations to meet clients' goals. Creative Edge, your brand, your future. Mickey Mickelson, publicist. And he, of course, is the publicist for tonight's guest. And actually for me as well. So, yay. Okay. Bobby Jean, did you ever figure out how to do a commercial for your own show?
Or, West Shop is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and Western lifestyle. We have everything from the boardroom needs right through riding on the prairie. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, fashion accessories, home decor like rugs, and general merchandise. National brands include Rockmount Ranchwear, the Scully Leather Company, and American West handbags, just to name a few. Shop online at www.outwestshop.com and enter code WB100 and receive $10 off your order. You can call us toll free and you'll either get myself or my husband Jim at 1-877-340-9378. It's always a great day out west.
Oh, look at that. I'm going to do a real quick one for Black Dog, and then we'll get going. Okay, well, you've typed your final period. You've stacked your last chapter. You sat back in your chair and said to yourself, I'm done. Nope, not even close. Sure, you finished your manuscript, but it takes a whole lot more work to have a completed book. Know what it takes? Let me go through the list for you. It takes editing, then it takes rewriting. Then it takes more editing, and then more rewriting, and then formatting, proofreading, more rewriting, more editing, and then if you're lucky, you can devise a cover and get some printed. Well, why not let the folks at Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books do that for you? For a very, very small investment, you too can do all of the above, and you get the finished printed book you dreamt about when you first started typing, and help you get some dollars in your pockets. So we're here for new writers that don't have the foggiest what they're doing. So having learned it, we can share it and help you get a book of which you can be proud. So give us a call at 805-795-3165 or email at jchristina@tuscanybaybooks.com or rpaolinelli, that's P-A-O-L-I-N-E-L-L-I, at tuscanybaybooks.com. You can send us a manuscript, and we'll take a look at it and see where we're going to go from there. Okay, tonight we have an author from, of course, she's one of Mickey Mickelson's authors. She is. She is a middle school teacher. She is. She writes young adult fiction, or young adult, fantasy, I guess. I'm going to let her give you more of the information because I really don't have a lot on her. I'm not even really concerned, sure that she actually exists. So,
you better hope she exists because we got a dead show if she doesn't.
I know. Well, no, we have your books to talk about. Anyway, will you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Ms. Jenna Green.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know what? I bet you never thought that you'd have that kind of an intro.
It was wonderful.
Well, everybody likes to clap, so there you go. Okay. We have dutifully sat down and read a book from yours this week called, what was it?
Imagine.
That is correct.
Imagine.
It is the first one on a series, and I don't know if there's going to be more than there. You have two of them now. Is that correct?
There's two right now, and a third is going to be released in a couple months, and eventually there'll be a fourth.
Okay, and so you're going to stop at four, or you're going to just keep on going with it?
Four is the plan.
Okay. But as we all know, plans are oftentimes broken. And,
yeah, it was supposed to be three.
Well, there you go. See? Well, it is most certainly young adult fantasy, but the genre in which you write, is it called YA fantasy, or is there another word for it?
That's what I call it. I always put that up online, uh-huh. What's your favorite genre, and I always say YA, and they're like, is that a genre or an age group? And I'm like, I think in the last few years it's become a genre in itself.
Well,
so,
I think you're right, because we had another writer.
YA.
We had another writer on that was in the same realm, another young adult fantasy, and I don't recall what the book was. Bobby Jean, do you have a recollection?
Oh, gosh. We've read a number of them, and that's a good question. Many of it's all escaping me now.
Me too.
Sorry to say.
Well, you know, so much of the young adult stuff follows what we're seeing on TV the last few years.
Yeah.
And movies, you know, with the vampire stuff and things like that, as well as just the fantasy genre, which, you know, we used to think fantasy was like everything from Superman to horror
Wonder
stuff.
Woman.
Yeah, and horror stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's gone so much the other way, and I guess maybe I should ask you, Jenna, is it the millennial generation or is it the generation before that really propelled this to where it is?
I would say the millennials, because I'm generation X or Y or W or something, and when I grew up, YA was Nancy Drew and the Babysitter's Club, and that was pretty much it. It's just in the last 5-10 years that it's really exploded with just what you can do with YA and the series that are coming out, and so many adults reading it that they've been able to create these characters and these worlds that people that are beyond maybe that age group are still reading it.
Mm-hmm. I have to say that, I think every one of the hosts, Bob and Bobby Jean as well, would agree in that you've taken the young adult fantasy and put it into a whole new realm. It is a place that, Bob, that's you.
Not supposed to be.
Put your cell phone on stun.
That was really bizarre. You know, I have my notes on my phone, as Jim knows this because he's always in the studio with me, and I use that. It used to be a reporter's notebook, but now I use my phone, and for some reason it swiped over to my at-bat, which is Major League Baseball, and it was a highlight being like, where'd that come from? I don't know.
but you've taken the fantasy to a whole different realm, and I'm impressed that you were able to do that, and it seemed effortless. I can't even talk. Effortless.
There you go.
Thank you. To me.
Thank you. I think part of it is that I didn't actually read a lot of fantasy when I was younger, so it wasn't influenced by a lot of things. I read a lot now.
Uh-huh.
Although I like the dystopian kind of subgenre of YA fantasy.
Well,
I
now,
like to read those, but I didn't grow up reading a lot of fantasy.
I would have thought that the fantasy that you're writing here would be a dystopian type of fantasy more than, say, a young adult, because you have some stuff in this book that is,
adult. Mature.
I don't. Yes, and I it should have an MA on it instead of a GEN.
Oh yeah, I like dark sometimes.
Oh, apparently.
Well, you know, going back to that, one of the things that, and we were talking about this before the show started, before we actually had you on the phone, and that goes back to something that when I read the first page, it just jumped right out at me, and I said, okay, I have a question. I know I'm going to have to ask her. You brought Becky Thatcher in, and we all know that Becky Thatcher was Tom Sawyer's girlfriend, and your main character is Becky Thatcher, and I have to ask, okay, where did that come from? Why did you do that, and is that something from your past as a child, or what?
I wanted to give her a literary name. She's the imaginative one. She's the bookworm, and I wanted to give her a very literary name, but I wanted it to be a bit subtle. Now, you guys might have picked up on the back Becky Thatcher, Tom Sawyer reference, but a lot of people don't. Mm. It's the it's kind of like a little Easter egg for the readers, the literary people of the world. Some people catch it, but a lot of people don't. So I love it when people do catch it.
Well, maybe that's,
and I think they do too. They're like, I know who that is.
Yeah, but maybe it's because
she's not a main character.
A lot of people don't read
girlfriend?
Tom Sawyer anymore. You know, don't you think? I don't think a lot of people read Tom Sawyer anymore, and it's not in schools anymore, or at least most of the schools that I've seen. They don't have it in reading curriculum,
no.
So people would not know who Becky Thatcher was. And we all know that it was her
really
fence they wrote on. So.
Yeah, she didn't whitewash anything else.
That's it.
Except history.
So, I'm going to jump ahead just a touch for you. Again, I'm going to let you get into this story here in a minute. But I like Bobby Jean, and Bobby and I usually I didn't talk to her this week, but usually she and I talk on Thursday morning sometime. And we discussed the books, and we discussed how we did with it. And we both had the same thought in that there were so many characters in this book. And, I mean, they just were everywhere. And it's like everybody had a name. And sometimes they were only in two paragraphs, and they were gone. And you never heard
and
from them again.
And there's all kinds of them, elves
and
brownies.
And they were everywhere. You had elves and brownies, and the brownies took off and went back to wherever they came from. And, I mean,
Were they cute, those
Girl Scouts, right?
I know, and then you had these creatures that tried to hunt them down and kill them. And Bobby and I both thought, you know, oh, my God, those are like velociraptors from Jurassic Park.
And with wings, with wings.
And I will give you kudos, and I don't do this to many people because I'm considered one of the best bad guy writers in the business, but you've got me beat. Nandor is undoubtedly one of the worst characters I think I have ever read in my life. There was no redeeming qualities with him whatsoever. So congratulations.
No, not really.
You did good on Nandor.
And he got his.
He did get his, but
yeah, and he doesn't have a huge. He's got a presence in the book, but you don't hear him talk a lot, and you don't see him a lot. And when you do, it's chilling.
I know.
I try to make it just eerie with his eyes. Just
and he talks like kind of with a hiss, and it's like, wow,
yeah.
Is he one of these creatures like in disguise? I don't know. Anyway, why don't you take a couple minutes and kind of give our listeners an idea of what this book actually is about? Because, I mean, we've trashed it now for the last 5 minutes. So,
it's people ask me that all the time, and I'm like, I don't know what it is because it doesn't fit any quite genre. It's sort of high fantasy, but I make up a lot of stuff, and there's characters that and species that aren't in any other fantasy book. So it's got some of the traditional characters with elves and dwarves, but not as many as other novels. The ages of my characters, they're 10 and 15, and you, as a teacher, you always say the reading group is based on the main character's age. Well, mm-hmm. these girls have a huge age gap between them. So trying to classify it, I always have that trouble. But I always say it's Harry Potter meets Lord of the Rings, except with way more girls, in that there's a quest involved. They have a villain, and they need to figure out a way to defeat them. But these girls are from Earth. They're right. I don't ever say the town, but I always think it's just somewhere in Canada. But it could easily be somewhere in the States, and they get
Ohio. Ohio. I kept seeing Ohio for some reason, you know, the Midwest somewhere.
Yeah, I was seeing Iowa.
Well, it's
Iowa.
It's wherever the reader is from, that's right. Where they're from.
There you go. That's a good point.
As I got into it, Jenna, and it took a little while to just kind of understand. You know, because they get swept away and they find themselves in this new land. And then I began to wonder, okay, Becky's a bookworm, and it sorts of starts during this storm, and Becky's reading under the, we all did that, right? All us book lovers, the light, the flashlight under the
covers.
And I thought, you know, maybe this will end where this has all been Becky's imagination. She's just been on this amazing, you know, ride. And of course, that's not what happens. But I began to feel like, you know, this is an epic journey. This is like the Odyssey. They have a goal. They're trying to get a place, and they have all these different things that happen. And I kept thinking of, you know, like the Odyssey with the sirens and these different challenges, and they lose some folks along the way, and they gain some folks along the way. And I thought, wow, this is a real epic journey. That's the way I began to contain it in my mind.
It's Becky's wildest dream and then turns into her like worst fantasy,
yeah.
And then spirals back. It's everything she's ever wanted. And then once she gets in there, she's like, this is different. And it wasn't what I planned.
Yeah.
Wow.
And she's so different from Kat, the skeptic, the I don't want to be here, I don't want to believe this.
But she's the one with all the magic.
Kat, yeah. That's the thing. Becky's the one that dreamt of this her whole life. Doesn't have any magic. She has a different role to play, but she's the one that wants the power, doesn't have it. Kat doesn't want the power, she's got it.
Right.
So there's definitely some irony in there.
Becky is because she is younger, she already hasn't really dealt with, a teenager is different than a 10-year-old. And you teach middle school, so you know this even better than those of us that don't remember.
It's been a long time.
But I love that she was still so kind of open and positive, and what you put these two gals through physically, I don't know how many 10 or 16-year-olds could handle it, but she just keeps being so that positive, where Kat can be a little more moody and a little more, and I thought, wow, she's really got them pegged, the 10-year-old and the teenager. And of course Kat is protective of her too, and sees that she's younger and understands that at the same time Kat's got to really kind of take, you know, be the protective shield for her. It's an interesting relationship between the two.
She has to take charge. I mean, she's 15, and so she's still a kid, but when you have a 10-year-old there, you're going to take care of them. Unfortunately, it's the world that they're in, it's kind of difficult. So,
and you separate them for a while. Yeah, and you separate them for a while. It's like, what is she doing?
I'm breaking my own heart. Well, and what happens? Kat takes on the role of wanting to protect Becky, and who gets injured first? It's Kat. Like,
right.
I'm kind of mean to my characters sometimes.
Well, speaking of mean, I kind of want to get back to your bad guy. You know, one of the things that in listening to you describe that character, would you liken him to maybe the Emperor in Star Wars, so to speak?
Oh, now I do. Man, I watched, maybe subconsciously, I watched a lot of Star Wars growing up.
Nice job, Bob.
Oh, that's good.
It's something in the eyes that they both share. That very cold, chilling look of just pure menace.
Of course, you know, in Star Wars, the Emperor really never dies. So is there a chance that we may see this guy in a future book?
Well, Nandor just kind of disappeared. He didn't die. So, okay.
He didn't die.
Spoiler alert.
I didn't bring that up. I just asked if we were seeing
that connected to him.
Spoiler alert, Jenna. Does he show up in book number two?
All I can say is there's a character that's connected to him.
Yes, there is. Yeah.
Well done. Well played.
So may I just ask, since you are a teacher with middle school students, do they read? Do they read what you write? And what do they think?
Some of them do. Some of them don't. Some of my students don't like reading at all. Some of them, it's not cool to read your teacher's book. But a lot of them do. I have a boy that he read the first one, and then he was reading the second, and he came to me on the last day of school, and he was like, I'm not done, but it's summer, and I have to give it back. And I was like, no, you don't. Read it over the summer. He's like, and it just melted my heart. And honestly, it's so my students are age 11, so some of it is a bit hard for them to read if they're not quite at that reading level. Some of them can do it, but some of them can't. But I get a lot of the high school kids. So we're kind of in a unique situation where our buildings are connected, the middle school and the high school. So a lot of them trail down and ask to borrow it or tell their friends or are passing it around. So it's some of the grade 8 and 9s are plowing through it right now, and it always makes me feel really good.
More girls or boys?
Good question.
A few more girls, but it was a boy that was reading it.
Really?
This year.
Really?
That is interesting.
Yeah.
Did he have it hidden inside of his peachy like we used to do with Lady Chatterley's lover?
He did not. But he's kind of the kid that marches to the beat of his own harmonica.
There you go. I like those are the kind of kids I like.
I like them. Yeah.
They're great. I'm sorry, Bob. Bob is over here chortling. Because he probably had a copy of Lady Chatterley.
It was a copy of something. I don't remember the title. I remember the words.
So I have to ask you about a couple of your characters, because some of the spelling is a little strange. And like Eston. We're trying to remember if Eston was Brianna's brother. Is that the way that went?
No, Brianna and Renan are brothers.
That's what I thought at first. Okay, and then we have
and then we have
Annalie, who shows up at the first of the book in two, three different guises, and then disappears, and then comes back.
Oh, yeah.
And
I haven't read a whole lot of fantasy, but there's that. There's always that wise character. Usually, it's a wise wizard. Gandalf would be one. And they come and they give the knowledge, and then sometimes they stay with the group and sometimes they flitter off. I decided this wise woman or this wise character would be a woman and would not stay with the group and give them basically the bare minimum of information they need and then leave them stranded because that was funny to me.
Well, it's almost like when they first met Annalie in the cottage, and it was almost like before Annalie disappeared. Well, I thought finally, but I was wrong. She passed on the magic to Kat and say, you know, you're the one with the magic. It's now your job to do this because I'm out of here. Or I'm my time is done, or however she said it. And then she kind of went away, and there they sat, you know. And they even lost a couch. I mean, here, you know, the house disappeared, the couch disappeared.
Right.
So... I mean, Where did this story come from? I mean, really? I mean, I was thinking LSD, but I'm probably wrong.
Well, I was about, I would say more vodka, if anything.
Oh,
but
bless you, my child.
I think part of it came in a dream. And the one part that was in the dream actually got cut. And it was Kat. And she's on a swing. And then it just stops, like, midair. And uh-huh. She's like, that's not normal. And then getting swept, right? And then trying to kick her legs and get off it. And it isn't mentioned in the book, but that whole scene is kind of cut. And then just getting transported to this whole new world. And I just love the idea of a quest or a journey where they don't know where they're going and they don't really know what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. I just love that element of it. And then I just started making characters and species and creatures and people up because that's fun.
Yes, you did.
I always do podcasts and things with historians or historical fiction writers, and they're like, they have to do so much research. And I'm like, should I just make it up?
That's a nice thing about fiction, isn't
way
it?
Way easier.
I like it.
I'm not going to ask you if you've put any of your students in your characters, because that would get you into some real trouble. But I am going to ask you if you have drawn from some of your students over the years to build your characters.
Not in this one, mostly because I wrote it the very first draft before I was a teacher. I was still in university. The character of Kat, though, is drawn from my two roommates at the time. Their names were Kate and Kathy, and they had the red hair, and were a bit temperamental. And I both admired them and sometimes got irritated by them. So they're from there. In some of the later books, there's no characters that are necessarily drawn from one of my students, but I sometimes put little subtle nods to them. You mentioned earlier some characters that you see for like two sentences have a last name.
Yeah.
So that might be a friend or a student or a student teacher. Maybe just throw their name in there.
Huh. Well, it's amazing you said that because Richard Paulinelli is going to be calling in here about, I don't know, whenever he gets off his butt and does it. He and I wrote a book together in Western called Last Lonely Trail, and it was full, and I mean full, of his friends. I mean, he put his wife in there. She was a madam of a whorehouse. He had one of his friends was a bartender. I mean, he just populated this book with his friends and real people. And I was amazed.
And he didn't kind of check any of them, did he?
No. Well, yeah, he did. I think did he did. Yeah.
His wife, probably.
Well, yeah, for sure he got his wife. I mean, I know Cheryl, and I'm dead. So, anyway.
Well, I'm hoping my sister never figures out that the character Ennally is just switching a few letters of her name. My sister's name is Elaine. And just by switching the spelling. But that character is not evil, but not necessarily one you'd admire. So I hope she never makes that connection.
No, she's
kind of
sneaky.
They do look alike in appearance, though.
That can be a real problem.
She's kind of sneaky in a way. So anyway, hey, I got to do a commercial real quick, and then we'll get back to you if y'all don't mind. Yeah. So we're gonna do that right now. You're leaving on vacation. Tickets have been purchased. Hotel reservations are confirmed. Mail delivery has been suspended. But what about the dog? All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepovers. It's the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. All Dogs Rule provides your best four-legged friend a place to run and play outside amongst orange trees and grass in a country setting. Your dog gets to be, your dog gets to be a dog. All Dogs Rule offers additional services including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming sessions in the creek, and training. Visit All Dogs Rule on the web at alldogsrule.com or give them a call, 805-524-1100. When your pup returns home with that smile on his face, will you leave wondering whose vacation was better? Well, we all know whose vacation was better. It was the dog. So give All Dogs Rule a call at 805-524-1100. Talk to Russ or Karen, and they can hook you right up. And that's it for them. So we are in the studio. It is now 729 in Thursday evening. We are on the phone with Jenna Green, who's the author of a wonderful fantasy book called Imagine. It's one of two, going to be soon one of three, and then one of four. And, of course, we have Bobby Jean on the hook with us, and Bob's in the studio. And back to you, Jenna.
Oh, yay, me.
So
I have.
Go ahead, Bobby.
Can I ask a question?
No, you can't ever again.
Jenna, in preparing for tonight, I did some, you know, research on you a little bit, found some really fun interviews, and I liked this piece of advice to writers, and then I'd like you to elaborate on it or give us another piece of advice. Your advice was write drunk and edit sober.
Hence the vodka.
I was going to say.
What other advice do you have for writers?
Well, that's the key one.
Oh, God. You just shot our whole show right in the butt. Right drunk and edit sober.
I might have brought it up, Jim, with LSD, and then when she
said
vodka,
I know, huh?
I thought, okay, I'm going to walk through that door.
I didn't invent that thing. I just repeat it. And that one comes from the fact that, editing, I hate it. The advice I would give writers, though, is downright. People are always planning for like years and then replanning, or they'll write like a page and then go back and rewrite it.
Yeah.
And they'll never get any further. I'm like, just sit down and write. And,
right.
You know, don't go back right away. Just keep going.
Right.
It might not be perfect. I rewrote start to finish this book. Not edited, not tweaked. I mean, wrote it 120 pages typed, threw it out, never looked at it again. Rewrote it again because I was 19 and just learning to write. We get so bogged down with everything having to be perfect, and when you look back at it right away, it's horrible. But if you wait a month, it's actually not so bad.
When right, you go back, right.
You're actually pleasantly surprised.
Well, and that's why we pay editors.
Doesn't totally suck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't totally suck. I like it.
So, Jenna, do you have a favorite genre of your own? I mean. We talked about the fact that you read Nancy Drew and that kind of stuff when you were growing up, and now you're into this fantasy world. Is there a genre that you really like that may or may not be this one?
I've yet to decide. I was thinking about like what books I've been reading last, and I'm reading like a children's book and a memoir. I tend to write in that broad fantasy genre. I mean, I have a contemporary novel, but there's still even little fantasy elements in it. I just like the freedom and the creativity that every once in a while I can just make stuff up. I don't have to stick totally true to reality. I mean, I have notebooks and I have notes, so that continuity through the story is in there, but I can't just stick to how the world as it is. I just can't. I don't know how.
So you make up your own.
We need ways to escape it, don't we?
Yeah.
Well, hers is vodka.
So were you encouraged to read when you were a child?
Oh, I'm a weird story with that. I have a late birthday, so I was quite young when I started school, and I was a remedial reader for grade 1, grade 2, grade 3, and then in grade 4 I was an advanced reader, and my parents were like, okay, you just got slow getting going or something, I don't know. My dad doesn't read, he's a scientist, he hates reading, but my mom and my sister and I all read all the time. So it's kind of weird though, half my family is illiterate practically, and the other half is just obsessed with literature.
Well, that happens.
And you fall in the middle, so you get both sides, right?
Yeah.
So what is your process? I mean, you sit down, you write a novel that is like totally, well, I mean, out of the world, out of this world. It is like nothing I've ever read before. And you, what do you do? You just sit down and start typing? Is that the deal?
Sometimes. I tend to have the beginning of the book and the end.
Uh-huh.
So I know where I have to get to.
Okay.
And then it's just, how do I get there?
Okay. So that's kind of what I do, too.
My best friend loves sitting down and plotting a book out with me. And, you know, we'll plan it all out. And then she'll read the draft as I write it. And people are like, well, why? Don't you know what's going to happen? She's like, it changes every time. Things change order. Characters appear and disappear. Because some of it, the writing just takes over. And it goes places that I didn't necessarily anticipate. Like a piece of dialogue will be like, oh, that's an idea. And so it'll trigger something. So the characters sometimes have a mind of their own. They don't always behave.
Yeah,
sometimes I wish they would. Sometimes I wish they wouldn't. It's okay.
So many writers we've talked to have the same comment about their characters don't often go where the writer wants them to go. They'll develop a mind of their own.
They're like characters.
And they just go.
Yeah.
And now you got to change your story because this Jabron has gone like totally off to the left, and you go, whoa, where'd that come from? So
yeah, they say stupid things sometimes. It's very weird. Yeah.
What characters were the most fun to write in this epic? Who was the most
the
fun
brownie.
To write?
A brownie.
I kind of figured.
Like drunk puppies.
They're so fun.
You can have them say or do anything.
Absolutely.
They were the kind of comedy relief when we were so weary from the last struggle.
Oh, and they come up in the next book, and they're even funnier. And actually, my publisher and I are looking into having them have a little picture book of their own, like a little companion book or a spinoff, because I just can't stop writing about these two. They're just hilarious.
They were pretty cute.
I get all excited when they come on the page. I'm like, yeah, an hour of pure fun.
Do you have plans to go into the plush field with those?
Oh, there you go.
Some merchandise. Little branding going on there. Mm-hmm.
We got to work on that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just got to get a good visual reference to them.
They're
hilarious.
I think that's a good way to go. I think you may have something there.
You may have something here. Sell it as a package. The book, the plush toys.
Yeah, there you go.
And the picture book.
And you go to these shows.
And you go to these shows and you got all three.
It's cellophane together.
Well, with a fun quote, they could be great on a T-shirt or a book bag or something like that, too. Kind of fun.
Oh, yeah.
It's like one brownie said, well, you ought to know.
Like a rock or a leaf that they found.
Yeah.
The brownie says, you ought to know you were a brownie.
Before you were a Girl Scout.
Anyway, what time of the day do you normally write, or when do you normally write?
I write a lot in the summer. I'm a teacher.
Okay.
And then I write in the evening. I have a 2-year-old, so she goes to bed at 8. And if she goes right to bed, I got 2 hours of writing. And if she doesn't, I got an hour of writing. And if mommy needs a drink, I get no hours of writing. But that's okay. I write
like
in very
mother.
Short spurts. Like a lot of people sit down and write for like 3-4 hours. I'm uh-huh. like, doesn't that hurt your back? I just can't do that. I have to kind of dream a scene, and then I go write it. So I tend to write 45 minutes to an hour at a time, but I write fairly quickly. So it all pans out. But, yeah, I tend to do it in the evening.
Do you have a word count that you try to do by day or by week, or page count that you try to do by day or by week?
No, and I know a lot of people do. I see that online all the time. They're counting their words. My goal is to sit down at the computer every night or every other night. That's the goal. And then whatever will come out, will come out. Sometimes I sit down there and I write 2 sentences and it's all garbage and I don't try and force it. I just walk away. Because the next night, if it just flows, then I'll blink and it's been 2 hours and I got 10 pages. And I'm like,
hot damn, mommy gets a drink.
I really won't.
Well, that leads us right into the question that Bobby Jean is fixing to ask you.
Yes. So do you experience writer's block? Yes or no? And if you do, how do you get around it?
Usually I just wait. and I'm just finding that that's not the day, then I just wait. And sometimes I'll get, my husband will catch me sitting on the couch just staring at the wall, and he's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm writing. He's like, you're just staring at the wall. I'm like, I'm trying to work this problem through because I got my characters in the situation, and I got to figure out how to get them out without it looking too stupid. So I'll just be kind of thinking it through. Do I have to go back and change something? Or what are some possibilities for how they get out of this situation? And then because I want to do it in a different way than other books and other characters. So sometimes it's just me staring at the wall, and that's how I get those ideas to, like, I'm working. It just doesn't look like it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I know the feeling.
And sometimes I really just am staring at the wall. But I don't tell them.
So I have to ask you, is there chocolate involved with that vodka as well?
Chocolate and vodka.
Always? Is that what you just said?
Chocolate.
Chocolate.
There's a cup of tea. You put the vodka in the tea.
God.
You look very British. You look very sophisticated. You wear your tiara because you can't write without wearing a tiara.
That's true. Oh, my God. I want a picture. I got to have a picture of this.
Something told me there was chocolate involved here somewhere.
Well, we have somebody calling in, so let's just see. Actually, it's a picture of Richard Polinelli, so that must be who it is. So let's go to here. Richard, is that you?
I got to have a picture of it.
Richard.
Oh, I got the picture, too.
Yeah, yeah, Richard.
Well, we have somebody calling in, so let's just see.
Turn off your radio. Come on, you know better.
What now? What?
Turn off your radio.
Yes, that is me.
Yes, I know that. And say hello to Jenna Green. She is on the other line.
Hello, Jenna. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm getting feedback here. Hang on. Okay, there you go. How about that?
That's fine. It was fine before. No,
hang on.
We
you
totally
know what?
Lost.
I'm going to call you back.
Okay. Bye. So now you've experienced Richard Polinelli.
Another fantasy writer.
Another fantasy writer. Actually, science fiction and fantasy, yeah. He's also one of Mickey's.
Oh, great.
So, I mean, this whole month is Mickey writers.
Or everywhere you go.
I'm telling you, that is absolutely the truth. Here he is.
Jenna, you're going to a conference tomorrow. Did I see that on your Facebook page?
Oh, yeah, in Calgary.
In Calgary.
Okay, Richard.
Hey, can you guys hear me now?
We could hear you before, Richard.
Yeah. Well, that's good. All I was getting was a constant feedback loop of your intro of me calling, so I had to do some technical difficulty repair here. But, Jenna, I have a quick question for you, if I can throw one in, if I haven't blown too much time here. You teach, what, fourth or fifth grade?
Middle school.
Fifth grade? Because I've got a series that I'm aiming toward fourth and fifth grade, and I was wondering how you determine if it's middle grade or if it's young adult. Were you ever able to figure that difference out?
Middle grade tends to be grade kind of 4, 5, 6. So they're that preteen, right?
Okay.
Like 9, 10, 11, 12. There's a bit of overlap because a lot of 11 and 12-year-olds will read young adult. And then young adult, it's a huge span, right? It's like 8 years. And there's things that an 18-year-old can read that an 11-year-old probably shouldn't. When people come and talk to me about my books, I have a young adult contemporary, and if I see like a little 10-year-old looking at it, I'm like, you might want to wait 6 or 7 years because it one's got some themes in there. But middle grade tends to be grade right around grade 4 or 5.
Right. I was just wondering how you balance, you know, because you've got fifth graders who are reading it. You know, how at what point do you say, okay, this if I go here with this story, it might be too much for them to be reading, as far as it may be above their age level. I mean, did you ever find yourself in that position writing that book?
I didn't. So when I started this book, I was 19. I didn't know anything about reading or publishing or word count. My editor asked me to cut out like 100,000 words. Found out later, the characters should be about the same age as your audience. I was like, well, I have two main characters and they're 6 years apart in age, so I blew that. So I don't stick to any of the standards. All that information that I've learned since, apparently I didn't know then. So I'm probably not the person to be asking in that front.
I was just curious because you've completed yours and you kind of gone through the process of kind of dialing in what your audience is, and I'm writing this one, and I have no clue if I'm dialed into the audience I'm actually trying to target, which is between 10 and 14 years. So you said, it's kind of on the border of being young adult. So, how do you bridge that and not be too much for the younger ones, but enough for the older age range to stay interested in?
And you'd be amazed. Like, just stick with the main character's age kind of around that. But you'd be amazed what kids can handle if the vocab is at the right level. If you've read Among the Hidden, a major character, like, the dies. There's lots of middle grade books where characters are just being knocked off left, right, and center. And horrible things happening. So Bridge to Terabithia is another one, or A Monster Calls. So as long as it's vocab and lengthwise, you'd be amazed what they can handle in terms of content.
Richard, it sounds like
we'll see. I'll throw it out there and we'll see what happens.
Well, he still needs to tell us about his book, so get to it, Richard.
yeah, real quick. My latest book is When the Gods Fell. It is definitely not young adult. It was supposed to come out September 4th during Dragon Con, and my print publishing company just decided for me we needed to release it 6 weeks early. So it's out now. If anybody wants to go check it out, it's on Amazon. It is in print, and it is in Kindle. And we are waiting for the final approval on the audiobook. So whichever format you like, it'll be there probably within the next week, I hope. And it's kind of a science fiction fantasy smashed together, and the whole premise is for thousands of years we've worshipped the gods and goddesses, but everything we've thought we knew about them is completely wrong, and we're about to find out just how wrong we've been.
Uh-huh. I actually have a copy of that book.
Yes, you do. I think I sent to you and to Bobby, as a matter of fact.
I think Bob Brill got a copy of it as well.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, should have.
Gorgeous cover.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, that was fun. Usually I do my covers, and I had to call in back up on that one because I couldn't quite get it dialed in, and Barbara Beck finished it off for me, and she did a great job with that cover.
Excellent. So the name of the book again is?
When the Gods Fell.
And it's by Richard Paulinelli. It's available now on Amazon.
Yep. And cool. And there is none of my friends will appear in it by name because I've stolen all the gods and goddesses.
You already heard that one, huh?
Hey, Richard, to answer your previous question, I think you probably just need to go out and rent a couple of grandkids.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, he has grandkids.
I actually have two of those. So, my grandson number one is the reason why I'm doing this series to begin with. So this is his idea. He's got me into this mess, and now I got to figure out how to get out of it.
I'm going to assume that it's published by Tuscany Bay Books.
It will, yes. It will be.
Good. All right, Rich, you got to go.
Okay, guys, we'll catch you later.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Happy National Book Lovers Day. I just have to throw that in there.
Well, you missed him because I already hung up on him.
That's okay. I wanted to throw it into the show.
Anyway, Jenna, golly, this time just flew by. And can you just give our audience your email and all your websites and whatever it is you got going there?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at jgreenwrites and Instagram, the same thing. Amazon, Jenna Green. Sometimes it helps if you put the book titles in as well, if you want to kind of narrow it down. Green is a kind of a popular name. So if you search Jenna Green Imagine, it'll pop up on Amazon and Goodreads and all that. And then Facebook, I'm on there too, and posting all the time and avoiding the writing, which I should be doing, or more likely the marketing that I should be doing.
Uh-huh. And that's and the book is, of course, called, what is it called again?
Imagine.
Imagine, that's right. John Lennon. See,
I thought that was the music you were going to use.
You know what? I got really busy, and I did not get to the music this week.
I believe you.
So you got Paul Simon instead, which is not a bad tune.
And give us the correct spelling of your last name, because there's multiple ways to do that, and I know that can be a problem as well.
Oh, yeah. Greene.
There you go. Green.
So, the like Canadian the color, spell. But add me if you want.
Greeny. Okay.
Greene.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time out to join us. And I hope you enjoy your vodka and tea.
Okay, I will. Thanks for having me.
And, it was a blast. It was an absolute blast. And like I said, this whole month, except for the end of the month, is taken up with Mickey's people. So we've got Mickey all the way through this month, which is kind of fun.
Woo, go Creative Edge.
I know, huh? Go Creative Edge. All right. Thanks again, Jenna. It's been a hoot talking to you, and it was a great book, incidentally.
Thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure. Bobby Jean, did you want to say anything to Jenna before we hang up on her?
Keep writing.
Keep drinking. Keep writing.
More vodka, more chocolate.
There you go. Take care, my friend.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
And Jenna Greene, one of Creative Edge's writers and in a stable with a whole bunch of us. I am, of course, one, and Richard Polinelli is one.
There's more.
And there's many more.
Yeah, I've noticed that, yeah.
Yeah. So, that's Shoots Another Thursday in the butt real quick. I am remiss. I do not know who is on next week. I'm sure that it will be posted on Facebook. I don't know. Well, my producer is in Las Vegas, so I didn't get the memo.
Is it Claire Fullerton? She's on this month.
No,
but
she's
I don't
on the
remember.
End. She's on the 30th. She's on the end. She's on the night that Bob's not here.
Okay.
So yeah, Claire's on this month, and we Claire's one of our favorites. So
yeah.
And she's got a new book out. So
yeah.
No, actually, it's her books win all kinds of awards.
Darn.
I don't get that.
I never get
that. The Faulkner Award. I'm going to have to talk to her about that when she's here.
I'm always like, number two, number three.
Yeah, I know.
Never win anything.
I mean.
Including the lottery.
Me either. One guy, I put my book out, Jonah Blue, in for an award. And they said, golly, out of 5 stars, you got 4 stars. We didn't like the dialogue, because the dialogue, you put it literally, and it didn't have to be. Well, who said? Anyway, all right. Well, we're going to get out of here because we got another team coming in. So with that being said, it's a Thursday night. We have killed it. Dead, dead, dead for Bob Brill, Bobby Jean Bell, and myself, Jim Christina. Thank you so much for listening. We will be here next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.